This is Audible.
Field Medic Harrison was doomed. He should have listened to his brother Daffeth in the first place. Right now, he could have been doing something safe and dull, like his brother, who worked in a care home back on Earth. Right now, Daffeth would be paring the skin from around an ingrown toenail for a grateful elderly patient. A rich, grateful elderly patient. But here was Harrison, squelching across a pitted, muddy battlefield on Recension. A dismal, bruised planet, light years from safe and dull. Harrison was cold, wet, tired, scared half to death, and trying not to get run down by a reversing supply vehicle. It loomed large in the soaking fog that enveloped everything. Mud-spattered brown uniforms scurried in and out of sight as soldiers busied themselves all around him. "Get out of the way!" Harrison yelled at a figure nearby. "That truck'll roll right over you. The driver wouldn't even notice the bump as it crushed you to death." "Sorry," panted the other man. He was thin and edgy and glanced nervously around into the fog. "You should be," Harrison admonished him. "There'll be plenty enough work for me when the Aquabi bombardment starts without having to patch you up. Combat staff are my priority." The thin man nodded and snorted an odd little laugh down his nose. "Pleased to meet you, Medic Harrison. My name's Nash. I'm an embedded journalist with this platoon." He extended his spindly arm for a handshake that Harrison did not accept. "I guess that, Nash," said Harrison. "I don't know what told me. Probably watching your futile attempt to keep your nice civilian uniform clean. Or maybe just what General Brudge told me about you." Harrison enjoyed using the General's name like a club to beat people into submission. Unlike one of the soldiers, though, Nash didn't flinch when he heard it. Harrison hated everything about the journalist. His inquisitiveness, his stupid laugh, his thin moustache, his dreary nasal voice. Harrison tried another approach. "Help unload the supplies from the truck," he snapped. "Fresh weapons?" Nash asked him. Harrison snorted. "For all the good they'll do us against those Aquabi devils. I want the medical supplies. Dr. Lenova has dispatched booster immunizations from the Van Nuys Hospital." 100 meters away, another huge supply truck heaved its way across the lumpy morass. Harrison could hear a strange new sound behind the vehicle noise, a clattering, grating sound like a much more powerful engine. It stopped with a thump, and all Harrison could hear now was the main engine chattering to a halt as the truck parked. He watched Nash pick his way prissily across the churned mud. The journalist looked like a khaki flamingo attempting to step on high, dry mounds of earth as he made his way to the rear flaps of the first truck. "Hurry up! Signals say that the enemy bombardment is imminent!" Harrison yelled at him. "And don't expect help from me then," he muttered to himself. "When the Aquabi attack, any civilian in this area is as good as dead." In the rear of the second truck, meanwhile, the door of a tall blue box opened. Donna Noble stepped out of the TARDIS and sniffed the air suspiciously. She and her friend the Doctor were the two newest civilians to arrive on the battleground of Recension. Doctor Who, Pest Control. Written by Peter Angelidis. Read by David Tennant. Part 1.
"Your parking is rubbish, Doctor,"
Donna clambered over a wooden crate that blocked the entrance to the TARDIS. I'd ask you to have another go, but I bet your three-point turn is even worse. The Doctor hopped onto the crate and pulled the TARDIS door closed behind him in one smooth movement. How many times did you say you'd set your driving test? And when I say sat, I mean got to the driving the car stage. And when I say driving the car, I mean frightening the examiner. He grinned down at her from his wooden pedestal. I remember you being taller. Donna craned her neck to look up at his tall, rangy frame. They'd landed in the back of a large transport vehicle, and the Doctor's head almost scraped the taut green fabric of its roof. She could feel the truck floor tilting slightly, the hum of the engine mingled with sounds of people talking outside. The tarpaulin was transparent enough to reveal that it was a bright day. Occasionally, the material darkened with the shadows of passers-by. The space was cold and a bit damp. Donna was glad she'd put on her new leather boots and worn this cardigan over her dress. The truck was 20 metres long and half as wide again. They were alone in the space. It was half filled with rough wooden crates, scattered at angles on the corrugated metal floor. Maybe they packed in a hurry, Donna observed. And what is that smell? The Doctor threw his head back and gave a huge sniff. Ah! Yes, recognise that anywhere. Biodegradable thermoplastic aliphatic polyester with overtones of petroleum fractions, hydrogenated polyolefins, esters, silicon and, yes, fluorocarbon with a smattering of ocrosol and picrosol. He smacked his lips like a chef appreciating a fabulous entree. Oh, yeah, said Donna, unconvinced. The Doctor jumped down from the box and the truck rattled as his trainers hit the metal floor. Put it another way, that's the smell of soldiers' uniforms, weapons lubricant and sweat. Donna wrinkled her nose. Oh, thanks a bundle. Did you use a tricorder to work that out, Dr. McCoy? It's a sonic screwdriver, said the Doctor, and you don't need to be on Star Trek to work it out. See for yourself, Captain Kirk. He directed her gaze to the words stenciled on the nearby crates. Uniforms and rifles, read Donna. What about the sweat?
I bet those boxes are really heavy, replied the Doctor.
Some squaddies will have heaved them in here. Donna examined a smaller box by the fabric wall of the truck. Couple of packs of medical supplies too. Hang on, squaddies?
Hello, said the Doctor. Camouflage clothing? Instruments of death? This is a military transport, not the 272 from Chiswick.
He plucked his sonic screwdriver from his jacket and sprang the lock on the nearest box. Ooh, fancy stuff. Handguns with isomorphic response butts.
I don't even want to ask, replied Donna.
A gust of cold, damp air wafted into the truck as the rear flaps opened abruptly. A sallow-faced young man stared in at them, his head and shoulders poking into the truck as his eyes adjusted to the darker interior. He seemed surprised to find that the truck was occupied. The collar of his muddy brown uniform was embellished with a striking green crescent. Donna grimaced.
They'll be pleased to see us then.
The Doctor had already taken out his psychic paper.
They will now. Hello there, I'm Dr. McCoy and this is Captain Kirk. We're undercover, literally, as it happens in this, covered vehicle.
Field Medic Harrison, sir, replied the young man. Despite his cramped position, he snapped off an awkward salute to Donna. Wasn't expecting you, ma'am. I'll have the men unload and advise Sergeant Chaco you're here. With this, he vanished back through the flaps.
That was surprisingly easy.
The Doctor pondered this for a while.
Maybe he has other things on his mind.
Captain Kirk, growled Donna. What was wrong with Corporal Noble? They're going to put me in charge and then I'm going to forget my own name. See where that gets us, Dr. McCoy?
The Doctor smiled apologetically. Working fast, acting quickly, he said, and nodded to the rear of the truck.
Anyway, moving on.
Oh, Dr. Noble, continued Donna. She pulled her cardigan straight and began to negotiate her way backwards out of the truck.
I could have been Dr. Noble. Why do you always get to be the Doctor? I am the Doctor,
he replied in an affronted tone. Donna slithered carefully through the exit flap to the truck, trying to avoid putting creases in her dress.
Well, just for once, why couldn't it be,
A confusing combination of sensations overwhelmed her. The noises outside the truck were much louder than she'd expected. The truck's thrumming engine and the soldiers tramping past brandishing their futuristic weapons. She couldn't see very far because of the fog, which was bright and dense in all directions, and through which figures appeared or vanished, apparently at random. The air was bitingly cold, even through her lovely cardigan. And worst of all, her new boots had immediately sunk at least 20 centimetres into thick, gloopy mud.
"Doctor!"
she wailed. His face appeared through the fabric at the rear of the truck. To her great annoyance, he seemed really pleased with what he saw.
"Oh, well done," he beamed. "You clever old thing."
"You what?" snapped Donna. The doctor sat down on the tailgate and dangled his feet over the edge.
"Brilliant parking," he grinned. "Landed neatly in the back of this truck to save us getting our shoes all muddy. Well, save me getting my shoes all muddy. I don't suppose this is helping, is it?"
Donna glared at him. She was about to speak when what looked like a motorcycle slewed to a halt nearby, spraying fat gobbets of mud right across her. The rider leapt from the saddle and seized an attaché case from his crudely parked vehicle. Donna watched his peaked cap bobbing up and down as the rider disappeared into the fog.
"Oi!" bellowed Donna. "Come back here, you clumsy tow rag!"
She spat out several flecks of mud and wiped her mouth indecorously on a clean part of her sleeve. The doctor held his arms out wide. Donna reached up to take his hands, but he waved them around in an expansive gesture instead.
"Look at this lot. Second great and bountiful human empire. Pioneers into the far reaches of their own galaxy and beyond."
"I'll need a bit of help here," said Donna.
Her boots had sunk as far as her calves now.
"They're humans, Donna, just like you."
The doctor had clearly misunderstood her. Donna leaned on the tailgate beside him and banged her head against her forearms. Three broad-shouldered, dirty-faced soldiers brushed past Donna and clambered on board the truck to unload. The doctor shuffled aside to let them aboard. Donna was surprised to see that one was a woman soldier. She seemed so slight in comparison to the others. Her ident badge said her name was Miriam. Field Medic Harrison returned. He gave a tired salute and began to explain how they were starting to unload. He looked uneasily at Donna's face. She screwed up her eyes at him in puzzlement.
"Sorry, ma'am."
Harrison turned from Donna and intercepted Miriam as she disembarked from the truck.
"Let me have that one, Private."
He removed one of the smaller boxes from Miriam. Donna recognised it as the medicines container. Harrison fumbled inside it and handed Donna a strip of capsules in a blister pack.
"You should take your immunisation booster, ma'am," he told her. "One now and then on the hour. The mud may be toxic, but we won't have time to analyse it before those devils on horseback start their bombardment. Orders from General Brudge."
He paused, as though the name was significant, and seemed disappointed in her lack of reaction. Donna just stared at the capsules in her hand. Before she could say anything, Harrison had loped off across the mud, elegantly avoiding the deeper holes. Donna slipped the capsules into her cardigan pocket.
"Bombardment? I don't like the sound of that."
The doctor watched Harrison vanish into the swirling fog. "All this mist, we must be near water," he pondered.
"Or in a dip.
Still, look on the bright side. No biting insects on a day like this. Though mozzies don't really bite, of course. They suck."
"I am glued to the spot," Donna said.
"I know, it's fascinating, isn't it?"
The doctor was off on one again, his enthusiasm bubbling over.
"First, they inject a mild painkiller that actually numbs the pain. And then..."
"Doctor," stated Donna carefully, "I am glued to the spot. Stuck in the toxic mud. Stop babbling about bugs and get me out."
"Sorry, yeah."
The doctor slipped off the back of the truck and stood carefully on the driest patch of earth he could find.
"Let's get you back into the TARDIS and we can check you over. Get a change of clothes too, you've got enough of them."
She agreed. "Nice warm bath."
The doctor tapped her elbows so that she'd lift her arms, gripped her shoulders from under her armpits and tugged. Donna's boots slurped noisily but did not re-emerge.
"What must I look like?" she moaned wretchedly.
"It's inside that matters," the doctor told her, "not what you look like." She tensed up.
"You're kidding me, right? This is me you're talking to?"
"Yeah," admitted the doctor. "I was thinking that when the words were coming out of my mouth. Never mind, grit your teeth and think about your extensive wardrobe."
He gave an extra large heave. Donna's feet popped out of her boots and she and the doctor staggered backwards. She squealed in disgust as her socks touched the muddy ground. There was another squealing sound from high above. Donna wondered what it was. The doctor already seemed to know and dragged her, protesting, over the sodden ground and towards the truck.
"Take cover," he yelled. "The bombardment has started."
"Incoming!"
bellowed Harrison from the middle distance. A dull crump sounded from beyond the truck, and a fountain of black earth spurted up into the air and scattered over them. There was a fizzing sound of energy. The remaining soldiers leapt out of the transport vehicle, fresh weapons in their hands. Harrison had appeared by Donna's side. He was looking to her for orders, she realised. She wasn't in uniform, she wasn't able to command him, and all because of a simple misunderstanding. Harrison's eyes glazed over. He toppled face forward and sprawled in the mud. Only then did Donna know what the fizzing sound was. Weapons were firing. Harrison had been shot dead in front of her. The dun-coloured shapes of more soldiers scurried past, taking positions. It took Donna a moment to work out what they were doing. They were aiming their rifles upward. She followed the direction of their weapons. She stared in disbelief. Donna could make out thin legs on fat, swollen bodies dropping from the invisible sky. The air was alive with gunfire as the creatures fell through the fog and clattered to the ground.
"Oh my God," she breathed.
"Doctor, they're dropping ponies on us." "Not exactly," he said, pulling her behind the truck.
Donna slithered in the mud and landed on her bum. She could feel the water soak right through. The doctor was still talking.
"Look again. Horses don't have parachutes."
He was right. The ponies' riders held energy weapons like crossbows. The nearest arrival was entangled in the silk canopy of its parachute, with only its legs visible. Two soldiers scurried across and gunned it down.
"Who in their right mind parachutes in on ponies?"
yelled Donna. The doctor was shaking his head.
"They're Aquabi. In fact, from the looks of them, they're Aquabi warriors."
"Devils on horseback," recalled Donna.
The wind lifted the parachute silk from the fallen body. From her position by the transport truck, Donna got a clearer view of the dead creature. The rider was sprawled in front of his mount, his silver breastplate gleaming in the flat light. No, it wasn't a rider. That breastplate connected with the torso of the animal. Donna saw that it was all one creature. Half human, half horse. It was a centaur. The muddy battlefield was scattered with human casualties too, but the few remaining centaurs were fleeing now, literally galloping off into the fog and pursued by the crackle of gunfire.
"That was over a bit too quickly," observed the doctor.
"Not for me," Donna told him. "What were they hoping to achieve?" The doctor was distracted now by the transport vehicle.
"Hey, look at this! No wonder these things don't get stuck in the mud. They've got an anti-grav system."
He smiled at Donna's baffled look.
"It's a hover truck. Look, it's rising up a bit more now. Lovely piece of engineering. Basic but elegant. Wait a minute, it's moving."
The vehicle swung sideways so that loose mud spurted from beneath it. Donna turned aside, but not before the front of her dress was drenched in dirty water.
"Stop!"
bellowed the doctor. He banged desperately on the raised tailgate, but to no avail. Within seconds, the transport had lurched around and accelerated off on an eccentric path into the fog.
"There goes my TARDIS!"
Donna slumped down in despair.
"There goes my wardrobe and my warm bath."
The doctor's energy hadn't dissipated. He raced across the muddy field and seized the clumsily parked motorcycle. He made a few deft adjustments with his sonic screwdriver, and the machine's engine roared into life.
"What are you doing?"
bellowed Donna.
"Gotta get it back," the doctor yelled at her. "Stay here."
He gunned the engine, wrenched the handlebars around, and roared off into the fog. As if the doctor's abrupt departure wasn't bad enough, the bike's rear wheel squirted an arc of dirt into the air that landed on Donna. She spat out some further flecks of mud. Was it toxic? She wiped her face on the cleanest part of her sleeve. A brace of soldiers hastened past, dragging a stretcher.
"Need some help over here," the one at the rear called out.
Donna heaved herself up and followed. After only a few metres, she heard someone sobbing. She veered off towards the sound, picking her way carefully in her stocking feet over the squashy terrain. A rake-thin figure, hardly more than a boy, huddled in a crumpled heap by a pair of thick metal stanchions. Donna recognised the boy from his cap. He was the dispatch rider who had collided with her earlier. He clung to another soldier and rocked back and forth, his grief unabashed. Donna was no medic, but she could see at once that the other lad was dead. The woman soldier from earlier, Miriam, sat beside him in a daze, her head in her hands, unable to offer comfort. Mist rolled in waves over them. The boy had a gash across his forehead and blood was running over his closed left eye. "Come on," Donna told him gently. "You need a doctor." "Actually, I sort of need a doctor too." He reluctantly laid his dead friend on the sodden ground and Donna helped him to his feet. She wanted to embrace him. He was just a kid. The dispatch rider stifled his tears and straightened his back. Looked like he was pulling himself together. Donna crouched down beside Miriam. "You okay?" Miriam stumbled to her feet. Donna wondered why the woman was looking so scared. Behind her, the dispatch rider groaned. Donna looked over her shoulder. Maybe it was a trick of the light, or the way the mist continued to roll across the battlefield and around him and the metal stanchions. But the boy's outline was blurred. His cap tumbled off the back of his head, and his hair stood up in spikes above his temple. When he shrugged, it was as though he had become broader and taller. There was a scraping sound beyond him, and his cloak fluttered around his shoulders. Hang on, his cloak? Where did that come from? The mist was playing tricks on her, surely. It made him look like a giant, upright beetle. And how was that possible? She had no time to speculate further. With a grinding shriek of distant gears, one of the two metal stanchions rose smoothly up into the air, dripping battlefield muck and debris. Almost as swiftly, it came down again, slightly to one side. There was a sickening crunch as the boy was crushed beneath it. Donna started forward, horrified. The stanchion was really a huge metal foot attached to some unseen body in the fog many metres above. The twisted remnants of a huge insect leg splayed out from beneath its heel. And now that Donna looked more closely, weren't there a few other piles of mangled insectoid remains nearby? The metal foot rose again and almost as quickly started to descend. Donna froze in astonishment. It was going to crush her like a bug! Someone gripped her wrist and wrenched her aside. Donna was twisted aside and flung spread-eagled into the dirt. Miriam had grabbed her and thrown her out of the path of the giant foot, but as it slammed down, it struck Miriam's trailing leg. She screamed in agony and collapsed to the ground. Donna remembered how the doctor had lifted her out of the mud earlier, so she seized the bewildered Miriam and hauled her aside. Miriam did not object, but merely whimpered as Donna dragged her to safety. Behind them, the ground shook as the gargantuan metal legs stamped off into the distance and were soon swallowed by the fog. Donna half carried the badly wounded woman back to the main area. A small group of demoralised and disheartened soldiers awaited them. They all looked younger than Donna in their shabby, mud-spattered uniforms. They were a disconsolate team of kids who'd just lost a football kickabout rather than a combat-trained group who'd survived the fight of their lives by the slimmest of margins. A burly bloke with a buzz cut and no neck surveyed them, his arms akimbo. He watched Donna approach and offered her a tentative salute.
"Ah, Captain Kirk, ma'am."
Donna stared blankly. "Do what?" Buzzcut bloke frowned.
"Sergeant Checker, ma'am. Do you have your ident?"
Donna remembered her alias and tried to drop back into character. She hissed air through her teeth.
"Bit busy here, Sarge. Wounded soldier. And the Iron Man is out there in the fog somewhere, crushing people like bugs. Look lively." "Sorry, ma'am. Protocol, you know. Field Medic Harrison said you arrived with a supply group, but I need confirmation."
Donna nodded at him.
"Lost in the fighting," she said. "You'd better assume command, Chaco."
It was a relief to be relieved of duty, she decided. No point looking to her for instructions. They might as well ask her to explain the offside rule in football.
"Nothing personal, ma'am."
Chaco turned on his heel and began barking orders at the bedraggled remnants of his platoon. The youngsters struggled up from the muddy ground, weary but unprotesting.
"Captain Kirk,"
said an adenoidal voice beside Donna. She didn't make the connection straight away.
Oh, yeah?
She replied.
Don't mind, Chaco, said the newcomer.
He was a thin man with an equally thin moustache. His helmet was stamped with the word press, and for a moment Donna thought that's what he was going to do to it as he raised his bony fingers. But he was just itchy. Donna saw that his bald head looked like a helmet too.
I'm a journalist following this troop, CJR Link.
Donna shook his proffered hand. Nice to meet you, Mr. Link. The thin man whinnied like a little horse, though his eyes were more suspicious than amused.
CJR Link is my agency. I'm Jenkinton Nash. Pleased to meet you too, Miss...
Donna, no, no,
know what? We should be moving on, babbled Donna. Yeah, that's what you should, know.
Nash laughed again. You're not a captain, and your name isn't Kirk either.
He looked like he was about to say more, but at that moment Sergeant Chaco marched smartly up to them. The only military vehicle not hijacked by the Aquabi was a blast-damaged troop carrier. Chaco ordered them to assist the wounded aboard. He also dispensed more inoculation tablets.
Will we all fit in the one transport, Sergeant? Asked Nash.
Chaco stared at him.
You're the journalist, Nash. You must have counted the number of survivors from this fiasco.
Sorry, mumbled Nash.
OK, Captain Kirk and I will start embarking them at once.
Donna studied Nash thoughtfully. Why wasn't he telling Chaco his suspicions about her? But Nash was already busying himself with the injured and would not catch her eye. She put her hands in her cardigan pockets and found the blister pack of inoculation pills that Harrison had given her.
Humans just like me, she pondered. That's what you said, Doctor.
She popped the first capsule from the strip and swallowed it. Now that she'd taken care of herself, Donna began to assist the survivors.
The doctor struggled with the motorbike's handbars. After only a few hundred metres, the ground rose steeply and the muddy terrain abruptly changed to a rocky scree. His whole body quivered as the bike's fat wheels bumped and shuddered over the lumpy surface. The fog made it impossible to see the truck, and the coughing roar of his motorbike's engine made it hard to listen for the roar of the truck's engine or the clatter of its frame as it careered off into the distance. He relied on sensing where the TARDIS was. The powerful emotional and mental bond between the Time Lord and his vessel was what kept him on course. The fog thinned as the road rose up. Soon, the doctor was able to make out the route he was following, a twisting mountain path. One sharp edge bordered an alarming drop into a valley with a dribble of river far, far below. If he'd known about that before the fog had dissipated, maybe he wouldn't have driven at such breakneck speed. He swerved the bike round a blind bend. The truck loomed large in his vision. It had stopped dead because of a fallen tree. The doctor wrestled for control. The bike flattened into a long skid until it whacked into the rear of the truck with a bone-jarring clang. He scrambled to his feet and leapt for the rear of the truck. To his annoyance, he found that the bike collision had mangled the tailgate latch. Even his sonic screwdriver couldn't unjam that one. He'd have to get in through the front cabin, so he hastened around the side of the vehicle. The truck hadn't just stopped. It had crunched right into the fallen tree. Two dazed and disoriented Aquabi warriors were crammed into the front cabin. One had folded its four legs beneath it and used its hands to steer. The other was upside down, its legs incongruously flailing in the air as it had worked the foot controls with its outstretched arms. The doctor squeezed past them into the cab and into the rear of the truck. There was the TARDIS. He'd be in and out in a flash. Except that another Aquabi hid in the back. A broad-shouldered female with a piebald coat and huge muscular arms. Her metal breastplate glittered in the half-light, and her hooves skittered on the corrugated metal floor. Her crossbow weapon had fallen next to the doctor, so he swept it up and threw it out of reach behind the TARDIS. The Aquabi scrabbled among the boxes of human weapons and produced a revolver in her left hand. The doctor could see a dangerous mixture of panic and anger in her wild green eyes. She pointed the weapon at his head. The instinct was to tense up, but the doctor made his body relax. He kept his voice soft and said two words calmly and distinctly. isomorphic response. Confusion flickered across the Aquabi woman's face. After a brief pause, she asked, "What?"
"There's an isomorphism between my TARDIS here and me. We're so similar in many ways. Can't live with her, can't live without her. You could say her properties are mapped to mine and mine to her. Designated driver, that's me. And that gun you're holding..." The doctor indicated the weapon just by a movement of his eyes. "Well, that's isomorphic too. Hasn't been primed for a specific user yet, so it's useless to you and harmless to me. And it must be so heavy. Can't you feel that? Why not just drop it? Hey?"
The doctor knew that his would-be attacker had expected a fight-or-flight response, yet he stayed calm, unthreatening, confident. He stated things that baffled her and that now needed an explanation. A huge adrenaline rush had energized the Aquabi during that first threat, but had suddenly dissipated, like the air out of an untied balloon, leaving her bewildered and suggestible. The gun dropped from her nerveless fingers and clattered to the metal floor.
"Did you notice," continued the doctor, "whether it was your rear hooves or your front hooves that stuck to the floor first? I'm sure you'll be very grateful, after struggling so very hard for the next few minutes, that your hooves do, eventually, come unstuck."
He could see from the panic in her eyes and the trembling around her fetlocks that the Aquabi warrior was already convinced that she could not move her legs. The doctor gave a big grin and approached the TARDIS door. He fetched the key out of his trouser pocket. "Must be going," he said, cheerfully. So it was a complete surprise to him when the Aquabi warrior lashed out with her right fist, punching him squarely on the chin. The doctor collapsed to the floor in a daze.
"I don't think so, human," said the warrior. She rubbed her grazed knuckles. "Just as well you forgot to disable my arms. Now unglue my hooves, or I'll kneel down and crush you to death."
It took nearly an hour to board the injured before they could head off for the Van Nuys Mobile Army Hospital. Back home, the sight of blood had made Donna feel faint. She'd once witnessed a road accident, some schoolboy who had overshot a curb on his bike and been clipped by a passing car. She had frozen on the spot, barely able to speak while other passers-by checked the boy's injuries, kept him calm and called for an ambulance. Yet now... she reassured each of the injured soldiers, eased them onto stretchers or helped them hobble up into the transport. She could calmly assess their injuries and apply makeshift bandages to some of them. She'd changed since her very first time in the TARDIS, Donna knew. She'd witnessed death at first hand. Had she grown more confident, she wondered, or just been desensitized? Had her time with the doctor helped her or hardened her? Donna had changed her filthy clothes and put on one of the new uniforms she'd found in the crates. The material was surprisingly warm, and even the heavy boots were comfortable. She thought about taking a gun to complete the look, but concluded it was a device for killing people and not part of a fancy dress costume. Instruments of death, the doctor had called them earlier. But where was the doctor now? Next to her, Private Merriam was taking frequent, shallow, agonized breaths. Donna squeezed her hand for reassurance. The landscape slipped by as the platoon transport meandered across the blasted landscape. The fog had lifted. Through slits in the canvas, Donna saw derelict villages dotted with broken, burned stables and odd, abandoned vehicles. Well, with four hooves and two arms, the centaurs must need a very different kind of runabout for the supermarket run. With a jolt, she suddenly knew she was looking at what this war had done to the Aquabi. The journalist Nash wiped his high forehead with the back of one hand and left a muddy smear where his hairline should have been. He caught Donna studying him. "Nice uniform," he told her.
Do you think Sergeant Chacko thinks I suit this uniform?
She asked Nash softly, not wanting to be overheard.
If you were a captain, replied Nash quietly, you'd understand why Chacko would want you to be the one telling General Brudge about this disaster. And your name's not Kirk, from the way you reacted.
Donna blew out a big sigh.
Not got the hang of this, have I? You're right, my name is Donna Noble and I'm not a captain. I never even got made a prefect.
Before she knew it, she was telling him about how she and the Doctor had crash-landed on this planet in their shuttle craft, and how he'd had to leave her behind after the Aquabi attack. It felt like a confession. Nash listened patiently, encouragingly. Despite his odd laugh and his intense eyes, Donna was warming to him. Soon, Nash was telling her how he'd got to Recension because he was researching a profile on General Brudge. The Pioneer Corps was the military elite, establishing strategic outposts ahead of the main military push, and General Brudge was a much-decorated officer in that corps, entrusted with subduing the native population on Recension. The more he'd struggled to establish a bridgehead for the Earth forces, the more Brudge hated this posting, away from the main military action.
Planetary guard duty, that's how he described it,
Nash said, and gave his funny little laugh.
And he swiftly stopped being flattered by my interest in him and began to resent it. I think he hates me even more than Lenova. She's the head surgeon at Van Nuys Hospital, where we're headed. Must be hard, Donna told him, being so far away from family and friends.
Nash's easy conversation dried up abruptly. Suddenly, all Donna could hear was the rattle of the vehicle and the groans of the injured.
Brudge and his soldiers, I mean. They're a long way from home.
Nash forced another laugh.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see. Donna watched his expression closely. You thought I was talking about you. Nash did not respond to this. Now you're hiding something, she told him. If you're doing a profile on this General Brudge, why are you out here on the battlefield instead of back there watching him? She chewed her lip for a while, unsure whether to continue. Do you know anything about Metal Mickey then, that dirty great robot, and those insect things? I wasn't imagining that, was I?
Donna explained what she'd seen on the fringes of the battlefield where she'd located the dispatch rider and Private Merriam. Her eyes raked Nash for any reaction. But all his earlier cheerfulness had evaporated, and he remained sullenly silent. She turned her attention back to Merriam. The soldier was moaning, delirious, struggling weakly on her stretcher. Despite the makeshift bandages, she was still bleeding copiously. Her leg looked like it was almost severed. Donna began to wonder for the first time whether Merriam would survive the journey to Van Nuys Hospital. General Brudge studied the plastic facade of the door in front of him. Why did he hesitate like this every time he went into Surgeon Lenova's office? Brudge was the commanding officer of the planetary forces, wasn't he? He knew the respect he engendered in his own troops, and as general he didn't have to care whether that was from admiration or the simple deference of rank. In fact, he knew it was most likely fear. With the campaign suffering the way it was, Brudge had already decided the troops had to be more terrified of him than those Aquabi devils they were fighting. He needed something only Lenova could give him. And to start with, Lenova had needed Brudge too. Lately, that codependency was more heavily weighted in Lenova's favour. That's why Brudge hovered outside the surgeon's door, a wayward schoolboy kicking his heels and worrying about what the headmistress would say. A smartly dressed orderly stepped up and gave Brudge a crisp salute.
I have this for Sergeant Lenova, sir.
Brudge stared down into the man's eyes and was pleased to see the fear still there. He surveyed the tray on the orderly's arm. It contained a tumbler and a carafe of fresh water, a luxury in these difficult times. He'd not seen Lenova eat anything for weeks. She never joined the others in the canteen, no longer took her pensive walks around the enclosed area of the mobile hospital. Some medical reason, no doubt.
Brudge took the tray from the orderly and dismissed the man with a peremptory jerk of his head. Then he seized the handle and, without knocking, threw open the door. He had to stoop to avoid banging his head on the frame. The familiar, sickly, sweet smell of the room assailed Brudge's nostrils. He peered through the half-light of the office to where Lenova looked up from the far side of a large table. Unlike the fighting soldiers on poor rations, she had a chubby face with dark, piggy eyes. She must be eating something because she'd put on more weight. The only thinness was in her grim, grey lips. Her voice was as cloying as the atmosphere.
I shall not tolerate one more interruption to my work. I won't be responsible for the consequences.
You ordered these.
Brudge placed the carafe and the glass on the near side of the desk, deliberately too far for Lenova to reach them without struggling.
Are you not eating?
She shook her jowly face.
I may feel peckish later, but I don't want you to bring me food, General. I want you to bring me news.
Brudge shuffled his feet.
There's been another unavoidable delay.
I thought you said the Aquabi were on their last legs, she grated at him. They are centaurs. Are you sure you counted those legs properly?
Your wonderful new troopers were supposed to make the difference, Lenova. You promised that.
And yet I feel the campaign is slipping away.
Lenova heaved her fat arms onto the table.
These troopers are unique.
Brudge's temper flared, and that's the only reason I allowed you to try your medical procedures on the injured and dying, purebreds and halflings alike.
With remarkable results, said Lenova, silkily,
yet they have to travel further and further into enemy territory. Why won't you move this mobile hospital nearer to the front? If we get boots on the ground faster, we can wipe out that Aquabi infestation.
We cannot move my delicate surgical equipment, the very devices that create these stronger, more agile troopers for you. Not all candidates are suitable. I need more subjects, Brudge.
Brudge bristled with anger.
I cannot call on more troops until the next reinforcement flights, and those are delayed by another 3 months.
Huh! Snorted Lenova. Perhaps you shouldn't have given your superiors such glowing reports of your initial successes, General. It's only because you told them you had as good as crushed the Aquabi that they thought they could redeploy the in-orbit support satellites.
Brudge resented Lenova's frequent taunting about this. Removing the satellites conserved rare resources for the off-planet campaign, but made long-distance communication on Recension nearly impossible. He tried to regain his composure.
I will bring you more patients. The survivors of a platoon have just arrived. Our intel was wrong, and they were ambushed by guerrillas during a supply drop. We thought we'd eliminated the Aquabi air capability when we raised their city weeks ago.
Lenova looked amused. Shock and awe, she said. So, how many survivors?
Not as many as you requested. The platoon sustained heavy casualties. Some of them barely survived.
You'll be surprised at the miracles I can work, said Lenova. But I still need more bodies.
Bodies?
Brudge stared at her.
Don't you mean patients, Surgeon Lenova?
She closed her eyes and inhaled deeply. Perhaps she was unaffected by the fetid smell of the darkened office. She gave a little grunt and wriggled in her chair behind the table.
Get them into the operating theatre, General, and my team can patch them up. This treatment makes them stronger than before, and those it doesn't work for, we just ship back home to an Earth hospital. One way or another, they're better off if you bring them back alive, instead of abandoning them on the field of battle. More bodies, General!
She grunted again and opened her deep-set eyes.
More patience, I mean.
Brudge stepped towards the door.
It's not like I can breathe them, you know.
He wondered why Lenova was giggling as he left the hot stink of her office. Donna sat and seethed for half an hour, maybe longer. The truck had finally pulled into the Van Nuys Mobile Hospital as the afternoon sun rose. Donna and the other able-bodied passengers had assisted the walking wounded from the vehicle and then, quickly but carefully, disembarked the most critically injured survivors. The triage area was in one of the large, firmly pegged tents that surrounded a central metal-framed set of offices. She helped Sergeant Chacko carry Merriam's stretcher through the flapping canvas entrance and was then told she had to leave and make space for others.
"I don't want to leave her!"
Donna yelled at the medics when they bustled her out. She needed to stay with the young woman, even if all she could do was hold her hand during her final moments. When she tried to insist that she was a captain in the army and they'd better do what she ordered, Chacko reminded her that her ID still wasn't verified. "And besides," he told her, "those doctors outrank you." So she had to sit outside in the warm afternoon sun and wait and seethe. She propped herself at the foot of a three-pointed mast, a skeletal structure of metal and wire that towered over the hospital.
"Comms tower," Nash told her. "It's useless since the satellites were repurposed."
He seemed to take everything in his stride. He'd sat there with Donna as though he was waiting for something or someone. He laid a reassuring hand on her arm.
"Stay with me," he said. "I know how this mobile hospital operates."
"I want to see that Merriam's all right," Donna whispered. Nash smiled.
"I have a way to get in."
A flurry of salutes told Donna that a more senior officer had arrived. Nash identified the newcomer as Lieutenant Jovich, the second in command. Jovich was a tall man, maybe a full 2 metres. His blotchy, shaved scalp and dark, tired eyes made his head look like a badly peeled potato. He spoke quietly with several soldiers, including Sergeant Chacko, who all appeared respectful but calm, despite their recent trauma. When a second officer stalked out of a nearby office, Donna noticed Chacko and his soldiers stiffened. They weren't just standing to attention. Their khaki frames were nearly rigid with trepidation, maybe even anger. Even Chacko's buzz cut seemed to bristle.
"It's General Brudge."
Nash leaped to his feet, snorting his little laugh in anticipation.
It was as though no one could take their eyes off Brudge.
It wasn't just his imperious manner that dominated. The general was taller and broader than his second in command. His broad, thin ears stood out and made his head seem too small for his body. 2 strong sinews flexed in the nape of his neck where his wire-wool hair had been shorn close to the leathery brown skin. Brudge seemed to ignore everyone except Jovich. He gazed unblinkingly at the lieutenant as he spoke.
"Surgeon Lanova's team should be completing the treatment shortly, Jovich. This miracle drug of hers seems to be doing the trick. Are they prepared for the renewed assault?"
Jovich coughed apologetically.
"Not all of them will be ready, sir."
"What?"
Donna could hear Brudge was incredulous.
"We need them, Jovich, for the main assault on the Aquabi HQ. I want all our boots on the ground this afternoon. I want to wipe those devils off the face of Recension like the animals they are. These revitalized troopers don't suffer the same kind of injuries as regular troops."
"They burn out faster, though," Jovich murmured.
It was clear that he didn't want to be overheard by the other soldiers, though Donna was close enough to catch his worried tone.
"They fight harder," riposted Brudge, brutally. "That's all that matters."
Jovich bravely held his ground.
"Some of the troops have had adverse reactions to the latest medication, sir."
"Halflings, no doubt," sneered Brudge dismissively. "If Earth Central recruited pure-blood humans in the first place, as I requested, there would have been no problems. I can do without crossbreeds and inbreeds from the outer solar system."
The soldiers nearby fidgeted in agitation, but Brudge ploughed on.
"Halflings," he spat. "They'll be the ones that Lanova has been shipping home as treatment failures in recent weeks. Trash we can do without, Jovich. Halfling trash."
There was a muttering in the ranks. It was as though Brudge was only now aware of the other soldiers. He stared them into silence, his gaze hosing over them like icy water. Nash took his opportunity to step forward.
This would be an ideal time for me to interview Surgeon Lenovo, General. You did say that I...
Not now, pressman, snapped Brudge.
But, General, you promised earlier that...
Out of my way!
Brudge practically shouldered the journalist aside. He strutted around the crowd of soldiers who still stood to painful attention in the hot sun.
Get them ready, Jovich. They'll have to do.
Donna couldn't hold her tongue any longer while this racist twerp snubbed his brave young troops.
Where were you, mate? When this lot were fighting your battle, where were you, eh?
Brudge halted before her.
So, you must be the mysterious new officer I've only just heard about.
He gave a sideways glance at Sergeant Chaco, who nodded almost imperceptibly.
The insolent Captain Kirk?
What if I am?
Earthstock, I hope.
The general placed his hands in the small of his back and studied Donna like a curiosity.
Are you a natural-born human?
Nah, joked Donna. Caesarean.
Brudge stared down his nose at her.
Yeah, I'm as human as they come, Donna admitted.
More human than you, I bet. This is war, said Brudge. I saw the way your men slaughtered those centaurs, hissed Donna. Is that war? It's pest control, replied Brudge.
He walked around Donna.
There's no confirmation of your status. We can hardly wait for the interplanetary link to be restored, so perhaps we should conduct a credibility assessment.
Do what?
Nash bustled up, snorting his silly laugh.
No need for a lie detector, General. I can personally confirm that she's an imposter. Real name is Donna Noble. Crashed on this planet with an accomplice, some kind of medic who fled the scene.
You slimy ratbag, shouted Donna. I trusted you. Well, a journalist. I should have known after all you said about...
She trailed off into a long, embarrassed silence in which she could hear her fragile alias smash into lots of tiny pieces.
Fair enough, she said. No need to apply them electrodes.
Brudge was smirking at her.
And yet you wear that uniform.
Oh, is it a uniform? I just thought this was a popular colour for shirts this season.
Brudge's smile did not falter.
If you are not entitled to wear it, then you should be executed as an impostor.
Donna blanched. Things were getting out of hand. Her mind raced. What should she do? What would the doctor do? And where was he now? Nash preened in front of the general. Donna wanted to strangle him with her bare hands. It might not improve her odds of survival, but at least she could take the double-crossing little runt with her. General Brudge's contempt for Nash hadn't abated.
What is it, pressman?
Return the favour, persisted Nash. You promised me a proper look at the medical facilities and an interview with Surgeon Lenova.
Very well, said Brudge, with a sly smile. I'm sure that Lenova can tolerate one more interruption to her work.
He gestured to a junior officer who led the journalist away to the main hospital building.
Now, as for you, Donna Noble.
She braced herself for the worst. But Sergeant Chaco stepped forward. Without so much as a permission to speak, sir, he explained how Donna had shown courage and stamina in the aftermath of the Aquabi ambush. Donna's astonishment was matched only by her relief. Even more surprisingly, General Brudge's mood seemed to change.
Good man, he told Chaco. Fine example of a native Earth soldier. The best.
He addressed Donna now.
You're lucky to have such handsome testimony. I believe you can earn that uniform. You'll be spared the firing squad and dispatched with the platoon. Departure in 15 minutes.
Oh, great, thought Donna. Execution by humans or death at the hands of warrior ponies? Or was it hooves? She had nothing to lose, so she decided to ask anyway.
Can I see Private Miriam before we leave? I owe her that.
Chaco pointed to a canvas building.
Leave her? She's coming with us.
Donna stared in amazement. Miriam stood in the doorway, wearing a fresh uniform. She was pale, but clearly pain-free. When she walked to join them, there was not even the trace of a limp. Miriam took Donna's hand and squeezed it firmly. Surgeon Lenova's team made me as good as new, she grinned.
After all your help, you didn't think I'd let you return to the front on your own, did you?
The buzzing in the doctor's head didn't go away when he woke up. He worked out after a while that it was the sound of flies fizzing and bumping around the cell. A huddled bunch of grubby humans watched him suspiciously from across the dank, cold room.
"Got any food?"
asked a teenage boy in a tattered uniform. The doctor rubbed his bruised chin. "Is it tea time? How long have I been out? Might be breakfast. Breakfast of champions, eh? Mind you, centaurs, dunno. Red Rum was a champion. He got hay for breakfast. All the needy was a champion."
"We need food," persisted the teenager.
"How about Devon Locke?" continued the doctor. "Champion the Wonder Horse, obviously. Shergar. I must get around to working out what happened to Shergar." The teenager rose angrily, his fists bunched.
"Leave him, McHenry,"
growled a sharp-faced woman on the concrete bench beside him.
"I've already checked."
She sucked her fingers. The doctor struggled upright, patted his pockets, looked at the scattered contents on the floor beside him.
"Oh, dear. I suppose you found that mousetrap, then."
The woman soldier stood up and pushed her angry face at the doctor. Her furious glare was almost enough to slice him in two. The doctor studied the name band stitched to her tunic.
"Corporal Pine. Very pleased to meet you. Well, I say very, that's putting it a bit strongly. Let's just say pleased to meet you. Well, I say pleased, whereas under the circumstances, I suppose..."
He gave an uncertain cough, aware that Corporal Pine was pulling back her arm to punch him. The confrontation was fortuitously cut short by the rattle of the cell door. The human prisoner scattered to the far side of the cell.
"It's Coblenza,"
hissed the teenager.
"Who's Coblenza?"
asked the doctor. Pine laughed mirthlessly.
"Sergeant Coblenza is the worst."
The cell door opened to admit the Aquabi woman who had captured the doctor. She carried a crossbow weapon and seized him roughly with her free hand.
"Make it easy on yourself," she warned him. "I can deliver you to Commander Padova, alive or dead."
Two Aquabi soldiers accompanied Sergeant Coblenza. The cell was one of at least half a dozen located deep in the basement of an old building. The Aquabi hustled the doctor up ramped passageways. They hurried along wide, curved corridors beside an impressive open courtyard. This must once have been a palatial building. Broken remnants of exquisite furniture, torn tapestries, and fragments of plaster and brickwork on the floor coverings bore witness to the bombardment of a prolonged conflict. In places, the shell of the building had been breached. Holes in these outer walls revealed the shattered remnants of the surrounding area. It was the rubble-strewn landscape of a once proud city. Handsome boulevards were holed by sporadic bomb craters and lined with the stark outlines of dead trees. Dilapidated palazzos crumbled either side of a choked river of scuttled ships.
"Look on it and marvel at what your people have done, human," grunted Coblenza. "Yet we will never surrender."
Yeah, grumbled the doctor. "Trot out all the old cliches. When I say trot out..."
He saw Coblenza looked murderous, so he added hastily,
"I'm not your enemy."
"Yes, I know,"
Coblenza whinnied derisively and shoved the doctor savagely.
"You humans are all merely obeying orders."
The further they went, the less pronounced the damage to the building. They were clearly approaching the most active, probably best protected part of the facility. Around one corner, the doctor spotted a door ajar that led into a room of humming equipment. He faked a stumble, escaped his guards, and slipped through. The darkened room was lined with scanners and monitors. Each workstation was attended by an Aquabi in headphones who did not register his arrival. Unlike their soldier counterparts, each wore cotton jackets in pastel colours. Within seconds, Coblenza hurried into the room and dragged the doctor away. His Aquabi guards were so much taller than the doctor that he was half carried, half dragged to their destination. This turned out to be a long, mirrored drawing room laid out with military maps and communications equipment. Coblenza threw him to the floor.
"Get up," ordered his captor.
"Make your mind up," grumbled the doctor.
At the far end of the room, a distinguished-looking figure was surrounded by attentive military staff. This Aquabi had a glossy palomino body, and the uniform of his upper torso was decorated with campaign medals.
He was taller than the other pony-sized centaurs, literally head and shoulders above them. Sergeant Koblenza nudged the doctor forward with her flank.
Commander Padova, sir.
The commander was irritated by the interruption. He stepped away from his circle of advisers.
What is it now?
The doctor was delighted to see the crowd had gathered round the TARDIS.
Oh, you found her!
Thanks for looking after her. He thrust his hands into his trouser pockets and felt a hot flush of alarm when he couldn't find the TARDIS key. Had the prisoners pickpocketed it?
Perhaps you're looking for this, said Padova.
He reached a hand back to the saddlebag that hung over his glossy golden coat and plucked out the TARDIS key.
Perhaps you can explain why it won't open the door to your device.
Well, it's all in the wrist action, grinned the doctor. Here, I'll show you. He moved forward to take the key. I must be off. I've a book on the go. New theories in anti-gravity. It was really hard to put down.
Padova raised the key out of reach. I don't think so, human.
Now, that's where you're wrong, see? Ooh! The doctor wrinkled his brow at Sergeant Koblenza, who had shoved him again with her flank.
Whoa there!
Are you trying to be funny? Scowled Koblenza.
Commander Padova leaned forward so that he loomed over the doctor.
You babble about anti-gravity, human. You are a technologist? My scientists cannot determine what weapon this blue box contains.
Ah, well, grinned the doctor. Couple of mistakes there. Not human, not a weapon. More of a vehicle.
The box, I mean. I'm not a vehicle. I mean, I'd have a job lifting you. The other way round, though, I could see that. We are people, said Padova, coldly. Not beasts of burden. You humans...
Nah, sorry, wrong again, insisted the doctor. He jerked his thumb at his own chest.
Not a human, he pointed at the TARDIS. Not a weapon. A travel device, then? Mused Padova.
Yes, continued the doctor, patiently. I can see why you'd be interested. Your city's been devastated. Your equipment back there is out of the Stone Age.
We will fight to our last man, snapped Padova.
He was clearly displeased to have the Aquabi shortcomings drawn so brutally to his attention by a mere prisoner.
This is our world. We will not surrender it lightly, even though you raised our city.
I noticed you were a bit stretched. Is that why you've been attacking the human supply chain? For your own purposes?
We will use your own devices of death against you.
Devices of death, agreed the doctor. I was saying that earlier to...
This isn't helping me really, is it?
So this transport device of yours, persisted Padova. Explain it, human.
The doctor looked despairingly at the high ceiling.
Not a human. Oh, what's the point?
Anyway, look at that tiny blue box. It'd be a tight squeeze for you lot, wouldn't it?
And the key's no use to you. Isomorphic response. I was telling Sergeant Koblenza about that earlier, wasn't I? Got a slap in the chops for it. There's gratitude for you. What will you do? Beat it out of me?
That is not our way, retorted Padova. Human prisoners are treated with respect.
Not what it looks like from those disgusting cells downstairs.
Padova straightened up again.
We treat them as well as our resources will allow. In battle we fight to the death, but unlike you humans, we don't slaughter captured prisoners in cold blood.
He seemed to lose interest in the doctor and pocketed the TARDIS key again.
Take him back to the cells and put this supposed transport device with the garbage.
The Aquabi guards seized the doctor's arms again.
He struggled in their fierce grip. Hang on, hang on! I'm really not a part of this conflict of yours. I just want to find my friend Donna and get away from here.
The Aquabi commander and his staff were already deep in conversation about something else. Four muscular Aquabi towed the TARDIS across the room. Koblenza and the guards hauled the doctor all the way back down to the cells as he remonstrated with them. His former cellmates studied him with suspicion as he was thrown back in with them. Pine and McHenry glared accusingly. Others cowered, even whimpered in the corner. The doctor listened at the cell door for the guard's hoofbeats to fade away. He detected a powerful, sickly sweet smell from the adjoining cell and could now hear a growing moan. Maybe the Aquabi were doing the best they could for their captives, but that spoke volumes about the fragile nature of their military strength rather than their humane treatment of captives, or whatever was the Aquabi alternative for the word humane. The guards were out of earshot. The doctor began to attack the door lock with his sonic screwdriver.
Hey! Shouted Corporal Pine. Why did they give you that?
Shh, it's mine,
the doctor replied, though I'm not sure it's any use on this old-fashioned deadbolt. The vibrations aren't rotating the lock cylinder.
You didn't have that in your pockets earlier, protested Payne.
I hid it in the lining of my jacket, explained the doctor. Wonder if I can use the magnetic setting on these bolts. There was a clattering sound from the next cell, and two male voices started to yell in terror. The effect on the doctor's cell was electric. Panic began to spread among the occupants. Payne leapt for the door, shoving the doctor aside.